chapter 1 verse number 37 through 46. Please repeat after me. Yadi api yadi api ete na pashyanti lobo pahata chetasa kulakshaya kratam dosham mitra drohe cha patakam katam nagyeyam asmabihi papadasman nivartitum kulakshaya kratam dosham prapashyadbhirjanardhana. Translation. O Janardana, although these men, their hearts overtaken by greed, see no fault in killing one's family or quarreling with friends, why should we, who can see the crime in destroying a family, engage in these acts of sin? Purport. A Kshatriya is not supposed to refuse to battle or gamble when he is so invited by some rival party. Under such an obligation, Arjuna could not refuse to fight because he had been challenged by the party of Duryodhan. In this connection, Arjuna considered that the other party might be blind to the effects of such a challenge. Arjuna, however, could see the evil consequences and could not accept the challenge. Obligation is actually binding when the effect is good, but when the effect is otherwise, then no one can be bound. Considering all these pros and cons, Arjuna decided not to fight. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuranmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I welcome you all for today's evening's Bhagavad Gita class. So in the Gita Mahatmya, it is described, Bharatamrata sarvasvam vishnuvaktrad vinishratam Gita gango udakam pitva punar janmana vidyate. So in the glorification of Bhagavad Gita, it is said in the Gita Mahatmya that the Bhagavad Gita is the nectar which is found within the Mahabharata, which is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Vishnu Vaktrad Vinishratam. Gita Gando Dakam Pitva Punar Janmana Vidyate. And one who drinks this nectar of the Bhagavad Gita, which is found within the Mahabharata, he is freed from the repeated cycle of birth and death. He is freed from material existence. So that is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to find a permanent solution to all the problems of life, all the miseries of material existence, to find a permanent solutions. The Gita has nothing to do with temporary solutions, stopgap solutions. The Bhagavad Gita is a literature which tells how to put an end to the repeated cycle of birth and death within material existence. Because material existence means misery is inevitable, is always miserable. It's like a diseased condition. So when a person is diseased, he goes to a doctor and the doctor puts him under medication, and as long as he's diseased, he has to follow certain regulations. So a sick patient cannot walk around too much. He cannot eat whatever he wants to eat. And he is not allowed to do so many things which he would have otherwise liked to do. So similarly, Bhagavad Gita and the path of spirituality, it is meant to rectify the diseased condition of a living entity. So certainly on the path of spirituality, one should expect certain rules and regulations which are to be followed. And those rules and regulations are followed just so that we'll become permanently free from all miserable conditions of life. So if a deceased patient doesn't follow the rules and regulations, then he'll never become all right again. He'll remain in a diseased condition. So similarly, there are restrictions, rules and regulations on the path of spiritual life. Certain don'ts, certain do's, and they are necessary for one to progress on the path of spirituality. And if one doesn't follow those, it is foolish. If a patient, he doesn't take care when he is sick, then he is foolish. Like, it's a pastime of Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada was here in Bombay, he started this life membership program. And Giriraj Maharaj used to go every day outside to make life members. And one day, when he returned to the temple, Prabhupada was there. And he asked him, "So, how are you? Are you tired?" So Giriraj Maharaj said, he was quite frank. He said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I am feeling quite sick today," because he was coming from Chicago, coming from a very affluent family. So he was going every day in the hot sun, so much of austerities. So he said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I am feeling quite sick." So Prabhupada said, "This is not very intelligent. Working hard for 2 days for Krishna and then recuperating for 3 days. It is not very intelligent. So now you should take some grapes." So Prabhupada said, "Go. Grapes are very good for giving energy, instant energy. So now it's grape season also. Useful tip. Grapes give instant energy, so you go and take grapes." And then he said, "Maharaj, that you should come in front of me and sit in front of me. You should eat the grapes." He gave Giriraj Maharaj a lot of care and attention. So Prabhupada, he said this. When you are sick, you should take care. Otherwise, you cannot get okay very soon. So spiritual life means there has to be restrictions. So naturally, a person who is serious on the path of spirituality, he has to do so much rules and regulations. And so to speak, so much of the enjoyments of his life is curtailed. Because in the Hare Krishna movement, there are 4 regulations. No illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, and no meat eating. So there are rules and regulations which curtail one's enjoyment to a certain extent. So a person who is serious on the path of spirituality has to sacrifice. He has to do some sacrifice. Without sacrifice, one cannot achieve anything in life. A student, if he doesn't sacrifice his play, he won't perform well in his studies. So similarly, if a spiritual seeker, a sincere spiritual seeker, doesn't follow rules and regulations and doesn't follow the path of sacrifice, he cannot attain perfection. So there is sacrifice involved. So as Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, when he is hearing what the path of spirituality is all about, he poses this very, very pertinent and important question in front of Krishna. He says, "Ayati shraddha yo peto yoga chalita manasa aprapya yoga samsiddhim kamgatim Krishna gacchati." He asks Krishna that what happens to an unsuccessful transcendentalist? He has sacrificed so much to embark on the path of spirituality, but if he fails, then he has lost both spheres. He has lost material life also, he has lost spiritual life also. So what happens to the unsuccessful transcendentalist? So Krishna says, Prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati sama suchinam shrimatam gehe yoga brashto bijayate. Krishna says that a person on the path of spirituality is never a loser. Whatever a person does on the path of spiritual life, it's to his eternal credit. Krishna never forgets what someone has done for him. One always gains by even taking a step forward on the path of spirituality. Even if a person comes once to the temple and takes the darshan of the Lord is pleased and never forgets. We might forget that I have visited the temple, but the Lord never forgets. So Krishna pacifies Arjuna and tells Arjuna that don't worry. If you have seriously embarked on the path of spiritual life, there is never a loss. Even if you die without attaining success, what happens to you? You will go to the higher planetary systems. And after spending a lot of time in the higher planetary systems, you will be born in the family of rich and righteous men. And for those who have proceeded on the path of spirituality to a greater extent, what is their destination? Athava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etadhi durlabhataram loke janmayadi drisham. And those who have proceeded on the path of spirituality to a great extent, they will take birth in the families of great transcendentalists. Kule bhavati dhimatam. They will take birth in the family of great transcendentalists. Etaddi durlabhataram loke janma yad idrisham. Krishna says, to take birth in such families is very rare. To read the exact translation, or if unsuccessful after a long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in the family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly, such a birth is rare in this world. So it is very interesting to note that Krishna takes this system of family tradition to help the unsuccessful yogi attain perfection. That means if a person is unsuccessful in one lifetime, he is given a chance to take birth in the family of great transcendentalists who have got well-established family traditions, by which that unsuccessful yogi, from his very childhood, he imbibes the spiritual culture from his family and then becomes successful in that particular lifetime. In fact, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that by the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalist generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord, and both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. So, it is such an important thing, this family tradition. Even Krishna uses this particular system to elevate yogis lifetime after lifetime. So when Arjuna, in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he is putting forward this argument to Krishna that if we kill the elder members of the family tradition will be destroyed. Now, it's a very, very relevant argument. And Arjuna goes further to actually explain the whole dynamics. I'll read the translation. With the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Rishni, comes unwanted progeny. An increase of unwanted population suddenly causes hellish life, both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped by the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children. All kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. So herein, Arjuna is explaining the complete dynamics of how if the family members, elders are killed, then the family tradition is destroyed. And then the elders of the family have to go to hell. So it is not a weak argument which Arjuna is presenting here. Because this concept of maintaining family tradition becomes all the more important when we understand that the ultimate goal of any person in material existence is to go back to the spiritual world and end the repetition of birth and death. So with this objective in mind, that this is the goal of life, then all family traditions make perfect sense. But if the ultimate objective is lost, that the goal of family tradition is to help people attain spiritual perfection, then family tradition seems to be a burden. It is like if the soul leaves the body. As long as the soul is within the body, the body remains healthy and strong. But once the soul leaves the body, then the body starts decaying until it starts rotting. So similarly, the original Vedic system and the original Vedic traditions, the purpose of all Vedic culture, Vedic tradition and Vedic systems was to help a person attain spiritual success. To help a person put an end to the repetition of birth and death. But with the advent of Kali Yuga, when this purpose was forgotten, that the purpose of life is to attain spiritual perfection, when that purpose was lost, then slowly, slowly, traditions, cultures starts decaying. Without a scientific understanding that all traditions and cultures are meant for spiritual progress, in due course of time, all cultures and traditions starts to seem like burden. They become burdensome. And so we see, as time is progressing, in India, the Vedic culture is more or less still intact, but still, as time is progressing, because people are not trained in the field of spirituality, because there is no spiritual education that is given, because of that, slowly, slowly, whatever remnants of Vedic culture and tradition was there earlier is being lost in due course of time. It's like earlier in America, the divorce rate was 70%. But as time progressed, divorce rate went down. Why? Because people stopped marrying at all. Because they started feeling that it's a burden. To get married is a burden. According to the Vedic system, according to the religions of the world, actually marriage is an act by which both husband and wife are given an opportunity to make spiritual progress. But when the objective is lost, marriage becomes a burden. And that is the case with all traditions. In society, spiritual education is not imparted. When spiritual education is not imparted, people forget the value of culture and tradition. And in due course of time, all tradition and culture is lost. In the modern system of education, people are simply taught about gross matter. The understanding is what we can see and perceive that controls nature. For example, According to scientific theories, modern scientific theories, by the process of chemical evolution, when chemicals combine in a particular way, there is creation of consciousness. So according to modern science, matter is very powerful. And from matter, consciousness is produced. And from matter, a person gains intelligence. The person gets memory by the combination of matter. Memory, intelligence, consciousness are all created by the combination of matter. But according to spiritual culture, spiritual education, it is the opposite. It is consciousness, it is the presence of the soul that gives rise to life, which gives rise to the body. Depending upon the consciousness, the person gets different kinds of bodies. It is the opposite. The spiritual science teaches us that it is the subtle forces of nature which are more powerful than the gross forces. The mind is more powerful than matter. Intelligence is more powerful than matter. Consciousness is more powerful than matter. And these things actually run the universe. And many modern findings also fall in line with this spiritual understanding. I'd like to present one particular case study from the University of Sheffield. So in this particular university, there was a young student who had an IQ of 126. That means he is very intelligent. And he passed out with high honors. Very intelligent boy, topped the university. So he went to his doctor. He had some problem. So the doctor, he saw that this person had an unusually big head. So he said that you go and have a test, have a checkup, a routine checkup from a neurologist. So this person went to John Lorber, the local neurologist from the University of Sheffield. And when John Lorber did the scanning of his head, he was shocked. And he wrote in his report, "There is a young student at this university who has an IQ of 126, intelligence quotient, has gained a first class honors degree in mathematics and is socially completely normal. And yet, the boy has virtually no brain." That means inside his skull, there was only 1% of the gray matter, which is generally found in a normal adult. Means his brain was this small, very tiny. Now, this one finding, there are many more findings, but this one finding is sufficient to topple the whole modern theory that when matter combines to make a big brain, is intelligence and mind created. The Vedic science says that actually mind and intelligence are subtle matter. Krishna says in the Gita, "Bhumi rapo nalo vayu kam mano buddhira evacha ahankara iti anme bhinna prakriti rashtada." Man, buddhi and ahankar, these are subtle matter. And to facilitate the functioning of the subtle matter, the gross body is given. That means the intelligence has to function, so a brain is provided. So it is the opposite of what the modern theory says. So the Vedic science, the spiritual science says that it is the subtle matters, the mind, the intelligence, the consciousness, which are actually the governing forces within society, within material existence. And because people in the modern world are not aware of this principle, the understanding is matter is everything, sense gratification is everything. So in a matter-based society, whereas there is no understanding of subtle phenomena, of subtle forces, people cannot see beyond matter. And when they read verses like this, where Arjuna is telling that when there is adultery in society, unchaste and unfaithful women, they give rise to unwanted progeny, and women have to be protected, children have to be protected from these influences, people feel that this is fanaticism. People feel, how can the consciousness of the mother influence the child? How is it possible? How is it possible that a chaste woman gives rise to good children and an unchaste woman gives rise to Varna Sankara or bad population? How is it possible? So they feel this is not possible, because the only understanding in today's society is matter is everything. They are unaware of subtle forces within material existence. And because of lack of this education, people feel that all these injunctions are there in the Shastras about family tradition to exploit certain sections of society. But actually that is not the case. The Vedic science actually says that actually the world is governed by subtle forces. And unless we take care and understand how these subtle forces work, we cannot have a peaceful society. We cannot have a good society. Not possible. There is chaos in society today. Why? Because people don't know how the world functions from the Vedic perspective. And so they feel that all these norms in society are simply just given for the sake of exploitation of the stronger classes so that they can exploit the weaker classes. For example, one devotee, he had visited a minister from South India. He is minister or he was minister, I don't really know. But this minister was telling, he was discussing about Ramayana. He said that, what wrong did Ravana do? He liked a pretty woman and he abducted her. Now what's wrong with that? Now he is a minister, he is a representative of the entire society. And this is his point of view. From this we can understand, it's a sample case. We can understand what is going on in society today. So this devotee was relating, another devotee told this devotee afterwards that you should have asked him that what if someone comes and abducts your wife, how will you feel? So this devotee replied that this minister might as well say yes, because he may not like his wife at all. So the whole world is in chaos. And with such leaders and with such education prevalent in society, with no knowledge of the subtle forces of material nature, with no knowledge of consciousness, with no knowledge of what the goal of life is, how can we expect a peaceful society? Simply not possible. So, when people hear these topics being discussed, they have got wrong notions of what the Vedic tradition is all about. But Arjuna is presenting a very, very scientific case of how things work. And I have got a few statistics to substantiate this point. 9 out of 10 prisoners in the age group of 15 and 19 years who have created violent crimes and are in jails were born out of adolescent teenage mothers. It's a very powerful statistics. 9 out of 10 prisoners in the age group of 15 and 19 years. And also there are three times chances of a child coming from a broken family to have a broken family in the future. So if a child is brought up in a broken family, he has got 3 times greater chances of having a broken family in the future. So these are statistics. And if we take these statistics and verify it with what the Vedas say, then they'll match with each other. And then we understand what is the importance What is the importance of family tradition? What is the importance of Vedic culture? How crucial these things are to have a nice and peaceful society. But the interesting point to be noted here is, Arjuna is telling Krishna such an important thing, family tradition. And here Arjuna is telling Krishna that, Krishna, if we fight this war, family tradition will be destroyed, and then the society will go to hell. But still Krishna is insisting Arjuna to fight. That is the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, the arguments which Arjuna gives are not ordinary arguments. Very substantial, very Vedic also. But still, the Gita makes the point that everything is important, but everything is meant to achieve an ultimate goal. That is devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami vasucha. Towards the end of the Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that give up all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. I'll liberate you from all sinful reactions and give you liberation and happiness. Do not fear. So this is the ultimate purpose of all the Vedic injunctions. So Vedic traditions, Vedic culture, everything is meant to achieve this ultimate end of surrendering to Krishna's lotus feet. So in the Bhagavad Gita, even though Arjuna is providing all these powerful arguments, and even though family tradition, Vedic culture is all very important, still Krishna tells Arjuna that because I, the Supreme Lord, am telling you to fight, you have to fight. So, this is a very important and interesting thing to understand, that everything in the Vedas has got its proper utility, but the ultimate purpose of all the Vedic injunctions is to advance in devotional service, is to surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada, when he went to the West, he entered a culture where there was no tradition, no culture practically. A society with no culture and no tradition. He was coming from India, that too from Vrindavan, where tradition and culture was so perfect and so pristine, and in the West, no tradition and no culture. So Prabhupada himself took the initiative to establish families. Now a sannyasi, he is socially dead, in the sense that he has no connection with any kind of family affairs. But still, he took efforts to re-establish certain traditions and cultures. He himself conducted marriages of boys and girls. Because in the hippie culture, boys and girls used to stay together just like that. So Prabhupada told, we should get married. He introduced all these Vedic culture, Vedic traditions. Once again, because all of these are conducive for spiritual progress. But his efforts weren't always successful. One particular case I would like to take, quite interesting. 1968, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. And when he was in Los Angeles, suddenly one of his disciples, Subal, he came to Srila Prabhupada and started crying. What was the case? This Subal, he had been duly married to another devotee, Krishna Devi Dasi, and Prabhupada had sent them to Mexico, to Santa Fe, to start a temple there. So when Subal and his wife had been to Santa Fe temple, Subal went to meet his parents at New York for a few days. And when he was at New York, some boy visited the temple at Santa Fe, and Krishna Devi Dasi, she ran away with this boy. So Subal, he came back to Prabhupada crying that my wife has run away. So Prabhupada said, don't worry, everything will be all right. You go back to Santa Fe and I'll write a letter to your wife. So Prabhupada didn't show any expressions at that particular point of time. But after he left, Prabhupada showed his disgust. What am I doing? Why should I get into all these family matters? I'm a sannyasi. So he was actually disgusted with the kind of people whom he was dealing with. So he wrote a letter to Krishna Devi Dasi. Meanwhile, Krishna Devi Dasi wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada that I want to stay with my boyfriend. So Prabhupada wrote a letter to her. Your recent activities have been very much upsetting to each and every member of our society. I never expected that you shall act in this way. If you love me at all and Krishna at all, you should immediately return back, either to me or to your husband without delay. In your letter, it is understood that you are repenting. You have done a great mistake. Come back and everything will be all right. So he's telling his disciple, please come back without delay to your husband or me. So time passed, nothing happened. Subal came back to Los Angeles. So Prabhupada pacified him and told Subal, he was a carpenter, you carve some deities of Radha Krishna out of mahogany wood. So he started carving the deities. And one day during conversation, Prabhupada was referring to this particular incident, and he said that Maya is very powerful. It's a big surprise that we are staying in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, to continue in Krishna consciousness is very, very difficult. And Prabhupada said, we have to pray at every moment that the power of Maya does not disturb us. So time passed, nothing happened. So in this particular first letter, Prabhupada tried his best to re-establish the family, bring husband and wife together. Tradition has to be continued. But then he wrote one more letter. Your husband, Sriman Subal Das, is living with me very peacefully and is carving Radha and Krishna from hardwood. Prabhupada says, so this life of material existence is just like hardwood. And if we can carve Krishna out of it, that is the success of our life. So at any circumstance, you must not forget Krishna. I love you at my heart, and therefore I gave you the name Krishna Devi Dasi. Don't forget Krishna even for a single moment. Chant Hare Krishna loudly or slowly, as it may be convenient. But don't forget to chant the holy names. And then he writes, very, very significant statement. I hope everything will be all right as soon as you come here with Randy, boyfriend. And I am awaiting your arrival with great interest. Now Prabhupada said, anyways you come back with your boyfriend Randy, no problem. But continue in Krishna consciousness. So family tradition and culture, it is very important. It is very conducive to progress on the path of Krishna consciousness. So if tradition and culture can be revived in a community, that is wonderful. Because if it is revived, spiritual life progresses smoothly for all sections of society. Just like it is happening here to some extent. To a great extent. But the higher principle is Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada understood that Kali Yuga is an age where one cannot expect people to follow tradition and culture all the time. But even though one may not be in a position to follow tradition or culture, the most important element of all Vedic knowledge is to surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. That is of prime importance. So Prabhupada, by his empowered genius, he started a system of reviving tradition and culture. At the same time, any person who walks into the temple for the very first time gets an opportunity to understand the highest goal of all Vedic studies, that is to surrender under the lotus feet of Krishna. So that is the brilliance of an acharya. So Arjuna is presenting these arguments to Krishna that family traditions are so important. How can we compromise with these family traditions? And then finally, Arjuna is going on presenting arguments, but simultaneously he is losing his composure. And finally says, better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra, weapons in hand, were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. And Sanjaya is relating the whole incident to Dhritarashtra and he says, E muktva Arjuna sankhe ratopasta upavishat visrajyasa sharam chapam shokasam vignamanasa. Sanjaya said, Arjuna, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows and sat down on the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. So Arjuna presented all kinds of arguments. Many of them were shastric. Most of them were shastric only. But what was the mistake which Arjuna did while analyzing his whole situation? Now Krishna starts answering. Krishna starts addressing Arjuna's situation from chapter 2. And in chapter 2 we will see that Arjuna presents a few more arguments and then Krishna takes over and he starts speaking the Bhagavad Gita. This is a sublime knowledge. Sarupanishodo gavo dogdha gopal anandana parto vatsa sudhir bhokta dugdham gita amritam mahat. If all the Vedas are compared to a cow, the essence of the cow is the milk. And the milk is the Bhagavad Gita. The essence of all Vedic knowledge. So in 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, one can perfectly understand. In the first chapter, one gets a glimpse of what is Vedic tradition and society. And in the complete Bhagavad Gita, one understands what is the goal of Vedic studies, what is the goal of life and how to achieve it. So please do continue coming. So we have completed the first chapter and we'll be starting from the second chapter from tomorrow. So it's already 8:30, it's time. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.